Yep, starting in 3, 2, 1. Hello everyone, welcome to our episode today. We have a special guest with us, Miss Lim. So Miss Lim have years of experience teaching in Singapore, and she's a very good friend of mine back in Singapore. So welcome, Miss Lim.
Hi.
Okay, so today we want to cover broadly on our scope how schools handle their pandemic situation. We talk about health and safety. So without further ado, as a parent, Danny, what's the biggest concern as a parent in terms of health and safety?
It would have to be guidance and restrictions that the government puts in place, but then making sure the children follow the same advice. So as one example, they recommend a 2 meter distance for social distancing, but how do you tell a child to be as normal as possible but still maintain that kind of safety and distancing in terms of the guidance, make sure your child is as safe as possible in those types of grouped environments?
Miss Lim, any comments on this?
Yeah, so in Singapore, our guideline is just 1 meter. And in schools, we enforce the rule of wearing masks. The only exception is if the child is special need or the child is really young, but in our case, it doesn't apply in our school. So for children that are 2 years and below, they are exempt from this rule. Whereas, well, everyone else would have to wear.
Yeah, so from my perspective, schools haven't got that rule. I think it's a you can if you want, but when I went to school and kind of observed the children there, no one was wearing it. The main thing they said was things like they had their own desks so that it was all allocated rather than they can sit where they want, and also make sure they bring things like outdoor gear because they will try to encourage and make sure that the children are outdoors more so they can spread out rather than always being indoors. But then it's not always possible because they only have a certain amount of space for all the classes and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so besides wearing the mask, which actually they can choose between wearing the face mask or putting on the face shield, although we strongly encourage the mask instead. So besides that, we also have segregated tables, so they are all seated apart.
Did you have to make any adjustments to things like your classrooms and the furniture and stuff for that?
So in the beginning, it was everyone is separated, like we call it the exam style of seating. So everyone is 1 meter apart from the left, right, front, center, back. And then, but subsequently, they allowed the lower primary, which is the 7 and 8 year olds, to sit in small groups so that they can have some cooperative work to be done. Whereas the older students, they still continue with the exam style seating.
Because my child isn't in that age group, I'm not sure.
I have a question. What's the class size that you guys are comparing?
Oh, right. Good question. For the lower primary, as I was saying.
Maybe you can share the class size. Is there any restriction now in Singapore and in UK?
No, it's still the same class size. So the lower primary will be about 30 in a class, and the upper primary will be 40 to 42.
For UK, it depends on the school itself and the location, because they use like catchment areas. So if you're in like a village, it's more likely to be smaller. Whereas if you're in a bigger town or city, it's going to be larger. But generally, I think most class sizes, they aim for about 30 maximum. And then when, and that's across all years. In terms of maximum sizes, I believe they had to follow the government guidance on no more than, was it 6 in a room? So that's where I think the biggest problem was, because a lot of places didn't have enough classrooms to only allow 6 compared to when they used to have 30.
Oh, I have no idea how that would be carried out.
So that's, I think that's why they only, so from June in the UK, they only allowed people from reception, so that's like 4-year-olds, to year ones, which are 5/6, back into school, and then the upper end of primary, so that would be year 6, because they were going to transition to secondary school. And I believe it was exam children as well. So you're talking in the secondary school, like when they would take their exams, that side. So it wasn't every single year that went back. They only selectively allowed certain age groups back into school. So they...
Okay. So are the classes back to normal now, or is it still like the school depends on?
They kept those years from June to, we broke up for summer holiday in July. It's going to go back to normal from September unless something changes.
Okay. So like what you've mentioned, in the beginning, it was similar. We allowed the primary sixes, which is the 12, because they are taking the exam, so they are allowed to come back to school for lessons. And subsequently, we had staggered levels coming back to school before eventually letting every student to come back to school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was quite confusing. And it changed at, like every few weeks, the guidelines given by the ministry.
I guess for us, it was the same throughout, so there was no confusion on that one. It was more the schools and the logistical side where they had to change it. So they were trying to plan out those classroom sizes. So at first it was like, oh yeah, we're going to stagger the classes so you have a morning and afternoon class. And it was like, no, numbers. At least in our school, they sent out a survey to say to parents, you don't have to come back, but can you please let us know if you do? And based on those survey results, they then tried to organize logistically of how many children they were expecting to come back. And I think in the end, they planned it on the survey, but then more people wanted to put their children back into school. And then they had to send out an email saying, that's it, we're full. Anyone who does want to, we ran out of space, or we haven't got the capacity to do it.
Yeah, so... I don't know, but we have to follow the ministry guidelines. It's not up to the school to decide for us, yeah. As in who gets to come back and all that, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess it's one is following the guidelines strictly. Another is using your own judgment as a school to carry out what is appropriate for each school. So what's the biggest challenge as a parent or as a teacher during this kind of ever-changing environment, then?
Maybe Dan can go first.
Oh, I was going to hope you would go first.
biggest challenge. So in my case, I think the biggest challenge was to convert my lessons online. So there was this long period of time where suddenly everyone is staying at home and we have to conduct the lessons online. And especially in my case, my students, they are not as well off, and they don't really have that kind of support at home. And especially because they're so young, when they go online, they need guidance. They need their parents to tell them how to log in, how to, you know, go about doing their assignments. So yeah, it was quite difficult to teach. Yeah. I even if I have lessons online, it's either they don't do it or they do it like they anyhow do it. So that was my biggest challenge, trying to engage them, trying to teach, because they are not suitable, I guess.
I'm interested to know, like, when you were training to become a teacher, did you have any training or experience with delivering online classes or lessons?
None, but then again, I was trained like 8 years ago.
Okay.
I don't think they have foreseen that, you know, this will be required in 8 years later. Yeah.
And did you get any training because of COVID in preparation for delivering classes online, or were you just told you must do it this way and that was it?
Yeah, but among the level, like the teachers teaching the same level, we started sharing like, oh, what we're doing with our class, like we share some tools and tips, and yeah, we get by, I guess.
How did you learn the tools?
It wasn't that difficult. So it's just, so we have to conduct live lessons, and the ministry actually provides this application called Zoom. So we are supposed to conduct lessons through Zoom. And there's also a platform for students to to do their assignment. So it's nationwide. Everyone has to do it the same way.
That's interesting because for our school, they didn't do any, as far as I'm aware, they didn't do any online teaching. Again, this probably varies quite a lot with the schools themselves as opposed to at the government level of what you need to provide within that month and a half between June and July. So for our schools, they didn't have any of that. They did give us a pack of basically printed out worksheets that the children could do, and we had access to the online version so we could reprint it if we want. They sent out newsletters and stuff like that as they normally do, but they also then checked in with a couple of people before the end of the year to make sure that how they were doing and that sort of thing, which was quite nice, that kind of personal touch. Even if you weren't going back into school, they kind of did that off their own back, I believe. But then I've heard reports from other parents in other schools in the UK that they did have like allocated time slots, almost like meetings or appointments with their teachers every day to say like go through what they should be doing, showing them what they've done, and then moving them on to other things. So it sounds like, at least from my experience, very localized to how the schools are delivering that compared to what you're doing, which is quite driven by the sounds of it at a national level.
Yeah, I mean, it differs across schools as to the expectations of the teachers. So for my school, they expected us to conduct live lessons at least twice a week. And I understand in different schools, they would have different expectations. So that's the slight difference, I guess.
As a parent, Danny, when you observe your kid when you were working from home, are there any interesting observations?
I have a greater appreciation for teachers.
Thank you.
There's no way it will be normal, as I would kind of put it, but trying to get them to learn, and he's like 6 years old, it's the same thing. They don't have the discipline and maturity to self-learn and stuff like that. So you always need someone, kind of like Miss Lim said, about someone to help them, guide them, and pay attention to them. So if I'm finding that difficult for one child, I have no idea how you do it for 30 children. I definitely a great appreciation for that. I would put myself in the tiger parent category because I was fortunate enough that I still had a job, so I could still carry on doing that. And whilst my employer was very understanding of the situation, and it still meant that I couldn't fully pay attention to my child to give them the education that they would have got in school and the attention they needed to do that sort of thing at home. Again, this goes back to my appreciation of that, the amount of effort it does take to do that sort of thing and trying to get them into that sort of rhythm. And it's that what I've noticed is a lot of times the things they struggle on are the things they don't want to do, which is understandable. So trying to get them to do it is even harder, whereas the stuff that they excel at, you say to them like, oh, go and read this or go and do these math sessions or science or whatever, and if they like it, they'll just go on and do it, and then they'll be done in pretty quickly. But then you want them to focus on the harder ones because it's the ones they struggle with, and that's where you get the kickbacks and stuff like that. So I think time-wise and the attention required to do it, and then I think, yeah, my takeaway would be the overall appreciation for teachers.
Yeah, so we do have a timetable that we follow because we don't want them to be addicted to the computer. So there is like a limit to how long our lessons and assignments should be. So yeah, so for example, each day there will be one math, one English, and one mother tongue assignment. Yeah, this is standard.
I think it's an interesting one because although we did that sort of thing, there was no enforced or mandatory kind of lessons that you did have to go for them, because they were saying like, oh, you could do this, here's some ideas, but it wasn't saying like your child must do it. So that's why I think it'll be very interesting once the schools do go back to normal, to then see how each child has progressed during that period, because I know for a fact that some people would have more time and was able to spend more energy into home teaching sort of thing, I wouldn't even call it home teaching, more like home parenting. And
yeah.
And versus like other people who may have said like, oh, it doesn't matter. It'll be interesting to see how that has impacted in the longer term, but also even in the shorter term of how, whether the people would notice the differences between before and after all of this as well, and different levels that the children are at.
Yeah, so like I said, I think it's very important because then again, this shows that, you know, when the children they come out of this, they are more resilient because this is going to be the new norm. Oh, I mean, yeah, so the concern about, you know, the children progressing in different pace after this whole period of home-based learning. Yeah, so that was one of the difficulty. I did spend some time catching up with the students once they came back, and I think now we are almost back to normal, so I think they can do it. So
was there more variance in what the capability of the children could do compared to normal? Because the way this is very from a non-professional background, if children are in the same classes in the same setting, I thought the rationale would be that all the children within a degree or two would have the same basis of their learning, so therefore the variance in what they can and can't do would be very minimal. So is that something that, for example, you have noticed that the variance has been wider because some people did stuff, say, during lockdown versus not lockdown? Did you notice that bit? And then also, did you have to do anything to try and either slow down or catch up the other children that were at the different wider ends of their capability?
Okay, but anyway, within a class, they are all mixed abilities. So there will always be a variance in terms of their capabilities. So I don't think it, I mean, in my opinion, is I don't think it widened or worsened. But of course, there is a difference. Yeah, I think it's almost the same, actually.
Okay, that's interesting because, for my child's school and classes, they also mix. They don't at the moment do any streaming or anything like that.
So when they started coming back to school, I could feel that they are more unsettled. The routines is a mess, and they are just like they're just more distracted all the time, because I guess they are just too used to that time where they are, you know, at home, they are relaxing, they are on holiday. But I think in recent weeks, they are more or less back to their normal, usual self. And yeah, I don't think there is there's a wide difference.
Okay, okay.
Did they enjoy their time during lockdown more, studying from home rather than going back to class in school and see their friends?
It differs from child to child. You know, some children, they prefer staying at home. Whereas some really miss school, they miss their friends, they miss school. But I would say the majority of them wants to come back to school.
Speaking of the widening of the capabilities, I was wondering some subjects, how do they do better or worse during this period? For example, like, how do you teach online music and physical education and other subjects? Does it differ?
Oh, that's a good question.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar because I teach English and math, whereas for music and PE, they are usually another teacher. And I believe for PE teacher, what they do is dance. They show videos of dancers and they get the children to maybe record and upload it. Yeah, that's the form of P lesson. And then music would be like, I have no idea. But yeah, there are lessons. There are lessons being done. Just I'm not sure in which, how was the lesson conducted?
That's I think is a really good question because I don't think we had any information on that side of things. From outside of school, there were various initiatives to do it. So things like personal trainer called Joe Wick. Every day he recorded or streamed exercises he could do at home, and he would do it along the idea being that it was aimed at children of any ages, so you could have 30 minutes of exercises in front of the TV, but you could do things like stretches and stuff like that. But again, that was off of his own back, nothing to do with the school or stuff like that. But beyond that, creative arts wise, nothing.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, even in Singapore, I would think the focus would be on the academic side, which is really a huge concern because right now it's the exam period and I think most students will be affected.
How are the exams going to change for the as a student, as a parent, and as a teacher?
So we had some exams on the national level recently. Well, what was different was there were safety measures in place, like the students have to sanitize their hands, they have to put on their masks, and we sanitize after each candidate. So it is doable. It is a little bit more troublesome, but yeah, things are pretty much the same. I understand that some topics are also cut off, like removed from the scope of the testing. Any concern if let's say there is an exam, would you be concerned, like would they be prepared enough?
If I was in that situation, then yeah, because especially if you're talking about things that affect going from, if you're transitioning from one, I don't know what you call it, like age group to another, so whether it's like primary to secondary, secondary to college, or that sort of thing, it is heavily based on exam results. I'll be very concerned. And even things like people finishing off degrees and masters and stuff like that, you know, these are at least in your early career and life, very important to how you get a footing into your next part of your life, sort of thing. And I think it also shows the in some ways over reliance on exam results. And I think if you look at things like in the workplace, yeah, exams are one way to base things off of it, off how you're performing. But other things like in an interview for a job, that's only part of it. You also look at things like your softer skills, which I think is missing. And that's why I wonder whether, I haven't heard it yet, but I wonder if this does cause an issue of, are we over-relying on exam results to base the decisions of how people move on next kind of thing?
Yeah, I guess if you don't carry on as per normal, like you said, the concern will be whether in the international level, these students are lagging behind the other international peers as well. Yeah, I agree. The over-reliance of education, academic grade in the society is quite concerning.
This is a pandemic, so it is affecting a large population, if not the world. So would you not think that everyone else would be on the same footing in that respect in terms of where people had to put things on hold and then carry on from? So everyone would be at the same advantage, disadvantage kind of thing?
I would say from what I observe now and from what both of you have just discussed, it seems that there are still gaps and on how and differences how each country or even schools react, and depending on how adaptable they are to the situation, and it definitely will have an impact on the students directly or indirectly. Meaning to say that those that are at the later stages of pandemic, or those that are able to adapt or react well, where their students will has a slight advantage, I would say, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
We are also looking at how the pandemic affect Asia and then the European countries as well, how different governments are attending to it. Of course, Asia had it earlier than the European countries, but the impact or their actions, aftermath and all those are quite different. So I would say there's still a gap. It's just that nobody go and measure yet. So maybe, Danny, this is the part that you talk about the stats, right?
Yeah, so Miss Lim, what data has been collected, or is there any additional data that's been collected as part of all of this, so that in years to come we could look back at it and say and see what happened, or if what impact it has had from an education point of view?
Right now I'm not too sure, but because it's we're just starting to enter the exam period, so I guess from there, we definitely would collect the data for how they are doing this year as compared to previous. Actually, we have been always doing that. Every year, we collect the data for the statistics for their.
But are you aware of any additional data that's been collected beyond the national tests and exams and stuff?
Not that I'm aware of, yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of that data collection, are there any predictions from the data collected then? I'm just curious if it is applicable to like the students of this age group.
I think it will definitely affect the students because the lessons I'm not even sure. I've heard from teachers that they cannot finish the syllabus. They are struggling to finish the curriculum, and I don't think the students would be able to perform as they can because of this.
As a parent, Danny, any thoughts on this?
Only what I've seen in the news, but I think most of the time, publicity-wise, they tend to focus on the upper school year, so secondary school exam results, because that's the end. That's the results at the end of your required education sort of thing, and a lot of the times they focus on that, and then that also affects like the colleges you go on to, and then when people go from college to university, those are the areas that the press seems to focus on mostly. Is that the same, Miss Lim, from in Singapore as well?
So I think in Singapore they do publicize on all the major exams, so even for the primary schools.
Okay.
Even though it's nationwide, they would say like perhaps the highest score and perhaps the national average score. Yeah, that's the standard, I think.
Let's summarize. So what did you learn as a parent, and what do you learn as a teacher?
As a parent, I think I said it before, the appreciation for teachers of what they do, and you know, if I struggle with one, how you do it with 30 is just mental. There's a public sentiment towards public sector sort of industries, and I think it just shows how underinvested we are. Things like being able to react to these types of situations, and even hearing what Miss Lim is going through versus how different it is in the UK, the variance in how these things are being done and coped with, I think it just shows that we need to invest more into essentially the future of the nation, because from my personal point of view and what I went through, I think the children could have done with more support. But with more support, I believe the education side needs to be empowered with the technology to do so, whereas businesses, I think, are either more or less there or already there with things like conference calls to be able to deliver virtual meetings and other sort of ability to teach our children, kind of like what Miss Lim said, if they needed help to log in and stuff like that, then how much priority is being put into their, I guess, the technology education to be able to do this sort of thing without having that as much support needed in the future if it does happen again.
How about Miss Lim as a teacher?
There's a lot of things I've learned. I think the most important one would probably be how important school is. I think school is the place, is like the second home. And there were a lot of stories to share, but I think all of them are, I don't know, it tells me how important the job I have is. And yeah, it's actually quite motivational for me, I guess, during this period to do what I can.
What did I learn as an observer? So obviously I'm concerned about the second wave as well in terms of the pandemic situation.
You mean worldwide or just UK?
Of course, worldwide. Yeah, so I can see that those that are able to adapt probably will emerge much stronger than their peers. Also, what I learned is like there seems to be some kind of gaps between subjects as well. So just now when we mentioned about like physical education and music, they don't seem to be given that same amount of weightage compared to other academic subjects in this society. And so this is what I see as an observer. Sorry, Miss Lim, you have thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, definitely we are very worried about the second wave because it's impacting not just the students, but also the parents themselves. So because when the students are very young and the parents are everything to them. So when the parents lose their job, well, we are told in school to look out for students who are really affected by this, be it like maybe their parents losing their jobs or them, you know, having worries or stress about exam. So that's really something that we should be very careful of.
Yeah, sure. So I guess I can relate that to my workplace piece, whereby we also look at their mental well-being of the... So I guess that's, as you know, is quite a big thing. And I guess in Singapore as well, you look after the well-being of the students, right?
Yeah.
We will wrap up this call. Thank you for joining us again, Ms. Lim.
Thank you.
See you soon. Okay, bye-bye.
Alrighty, bye-bye.